Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Wattier.
And I'm Tommy Welling, and you're listening to the Fasting for Life podcast.
This podcast is about using fasting as a tool to regain your health, achieve ultimate wellness, and live the life you truly deserve.
Each episode is a short conversation on a single topic with immediate actionable steps. We cover everything from fat loss and health and wellness to the science of lifestyle design.
We started Fasting for Life because of how fasting has transformed our lives, and we hope to share the tools that we have learned along the way. Hey everyone, welcome to the Fasting for Life podcast. My name is Dr. Scott Wattier, and I'm here as always with my good friend and colleague Tommy Welling. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey Scott, how are you?
Doing fantastic and rocking and rolling. We got our challenge coming up. We'll talk a little bit about that. We have a really cool study that has just kind of overlaid itself over the last 12 months of our journey on this, rolling out these fasting plans and programs to everyone. And so excited to dive into some of the main takeaways and the main points and just kind of anchor ourselves to making sure that we're coming up with actionable, repeatable things that can get people results. And I think this study is going to talk, directly to, a couple of those things. And I like the way that you framed it in terms of, the wording and the mindset behind it. So yeah, just really excited to, start the year off with this upcoming challenge. And then, a couple of takeaway points regarding, what we can do to make sure that we're getting people the results they're looking for.
Yeah, I think it's interesting as the conversation kind of evolves, because you and I get to hear more and more people speaking about their journey and where they started and where they are with their own, fasting journey and what kind of struggle points that are coming up for them and how they're getting through them and what seem to be the sticking points for them. This study really speaks to a few of those things that we keep hearing on a recurring basis from people in all different steps along the fasting journey.
Yep. And it's perfectly timed at the beginning of the year and the New Year's resolutions. If you've been getting our emails, you can see that there's an undertone to them in that it's new year, new you, but resolutions isn't the way to get there. So the challenge that's coming up on the 28th of January, we already had a waiting list for it. So there's a lot of excitement around it because a lot of people, we had 55 people go through the one in the fall. And we'll speak to the results from that as well for a second and kind of compare them to what, reality is. And then, talk through the framework of the study. Mm-hmm. But the challenge coming up on the 28th is really going to be going back to the basics and simplifying it again, distilling it down to a point where, providing hope and encouragement and enlightenment on why the weight loss resistance, why the diet resistance, why the, low and slow, why my metabolism, oh, it's my thyroid, oh, I think it's genetic, all of these different factors that play into it. The challenge is really going to dispel all of that and get down to the nitty gritty, what it is that you need to do, how to get the wins under your belt the quickest. And then most importantly, leave feeling like you have control again. And I don't know about you, but coming out of 2020 into 2021, control what you can control, control the important things, and kind of let all the other stuff just fall by the wayside. And one of the most important things you can control is your health. And typically for a lot of people, that starts with the weight loss struggle.
Yeah. Specifically, when you eat and what you're eating are two of the main things that we can control, even when there's very little, outside control. And I think, like you said, 2020 kind of highlighted that. And, it's time for us to do something, about those internal feelings of control. And that really makes for, an important feeling for our quality of life too. A sense of control is important for us as human beings. And, even some semblance of that and knowing what you're going to do and having a plan and being able to do it and execute it and stick to it and understand where you're going, I think is a really important thing to be able to lean on for all of us.
Yeah. And that's huge too. Speaking of external forces that you can't control, some of the people that didn't sign up for the challenge in December, cited some of their concerns about being able to handle this type of thing, in the holiday season. Right.
Right.
So the holiday season is over. So that excuse respectfully does not exist anymore. So now it's, all right, I'm going to start with the New Year's resolutions. I'm going to get back on track. It's going to be my best year. Well, we figured out some stuff in that, you know, support and community is a big part of it. And the other part is really understanding, you know, what's going on from a physiological standpoint. So the study, which I thought was cool, it's an older study. It's out of the New England Journal of Medicine in 1992. And it talks about the discrepancy between self-reported and actual caloric intake and exercise in obese subjects. So it's looking at this self-reporting piece, which Tommy, you've called slippage, right? So
right.
That's one piece. And then the other piece is going to be if there actually is a physiologic, you know, energy, low energy expenditure type situation going on.
Yeah, like a basically a metabolism that's not working well or that has been slowed down either from some sort of pathophysiological process or from a history of dieting, because most of these subjects had a history of diet and weight loss attempts and had been reporting themselves as diet resistant and basically treating themselves as if they had a slow metabolism already, which is one of the main fear and concern points that we hear from people coming into the challenge and sending us emails and talking to us, is that they're concerned that either they've already slowed down their metabolism or that if they begin fasting, they will slow down their metabolism. But what the research shows is that, you know, in most cases, that's simply not the case. So the duration of the fast and what you're actually consuming when you do break the fast tend to make up the overall calorie intake. Combine that with daily calorie needs, and then you end up with, you know, either a calorie surplus or a calorie deficit, you know, or you are maintaining weight and with a balanced calorie intake. So I thought it was interesting in this study that basically everyone who was coming through was self-reported as diet resistant, but they did a few things to determine if that was actually the case. So they were taking measurements of calorie intake, of food journaling, of self-reported exercise, as well as taking actual physiological measurements to see how many calories were being burned by each of the subjects in the study, which was really interesting to me because it made for a very large graphical difference between what the subjects were reporting that they were eating and what they had actually eaten. So even within a very short time frame, to be able to accurately estimate how many calories and the size of the food portion, how many bites did you take, how much of the plate was filled up, all these kind of things that would lead to the overall number of calories and thus the calorie deficit or the calorie surplus, those were very difficult for subjects to accurately report.
So it's really interesting, Tom, because what I'm hearing there is, you know, when we're looking at the study, the self-reporting issue and the intake issue is they wanted to kind of weigh and rule out, is it actually the low energy expenditure? Is there a physiological issue? Or is it really just the AKA bad patient, right? The air quotes, like, is it the bad patient? Is the patient
right,
not reporting what they actually are eating? And what they found was that there was no difference in the two groups in the thermic effect of food. So their energy burning, right? How they actually burn the energy in the two groups of the self-reported diet resistance or thyroid or genetic or familial type situation where, you know, I just can't lose weight. I just struggle versus the group where, you know, they were looking at the difference between the two groups, I should say. And it became clear that there was no physiological difference. It really came down to the major underreporting of food intake and the major overreporting of exercise. So it was a discrepancy of around 1,200 to 1,300 calories. And the I want to frame it the way that you do so
every
well
day?
With
every day.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
12 to 1300 calories per day.
So people were thinking they were ingesting less than 1200 calories per day, and it was actually closer to 2500. So double.
Wow. Right. Wow. Over a week. So let's extrapolate that. So you're talking about a third of a pound of fat. Do that over a week. You're talking about over 2 pounds of fat per week, just in the difference between what people thought they had ingested and what they had actually ingested. So they could literally see the scale tick up 2 pounds.
So this wow. comes down to where I felt like this study kind of overlaid the challenge and what we've seen with our continuity, our group coaching, and some of our one-on-one clients, and all of the dozens of messages that we get a week via Facebook or our website or email saying, hey, it's just not working. Like, I don't understand. There's a lot of room for error in the tracking side of things. Technology's made it a little bit easier. But when we look at those numbers that you just broke it down, I feel like the overlap is this. You know, the last few challenges we've done, we'll see people, and not just one person, we're talking to people that follow through and engage in the challenge. We typically see anywhere from a, you know, 6 to 8 pound on the low end, all the way up to a 14 and 15 pound weight loss in 10 days,
right?
Mm-hmm. Right? So that is not normal, nor is it sustainable long-term. It is normal when you combine the fasting cycles that we show you, meaning the timing of when you're eating your food and the hours in between, and you really hone in on those specifics. Like when my dad came down to visit, you know, he was doing it at home, seeing great results. And then here with him, with us in this house for 10 days, he actually had to call his doctor and came off two medications while he was here because his body had down-regulated so much that he no longer needed one of the blood pressure and one of the diuretics. It was literally giving him, you know, really low blood pressure readings because his body had changed so much in just the 10 days that he was here, right?
Wow.
So we're not talking about sustaining that for month and month and month and month and month on end. It's when people come into the challenge, they lose this weight, and then comparing that to what normal is, right? We hear industry standard 0 to 2 pounds a week. But week to week, depending on when you're actually weighing yourself, because, you know, you can go out and have a weekend where you can 5 to 10,000 caloric surplus in one heck of a party weekend, one bachelor weekend, one wedding weekend, one,
right,
you know, date, you know, staycation weekend, whatever it is, you can really, you know, set yourself back. And then even on a smaller scale, you know, just a few hundred calories a day could be a couple of pounds each week. And the scale is a really gross representation of what's happening physiologically, where the downward trend of fat loss should be, you know, visually it should be trending downwards, like kind of like a straight line over time. But the scale, mm-hmm. the weight is going to fluctuate anywhere between 2 to 4 kilograms per day, depending on your body mass, the amount of fat you have, the amount of lean muscle you have, the level of activity you have, the consumption patterns that you have, et cetera, carbohydrates, alcohol, all of this different stuff. So these people come into our challenge and it's like, man, I've struggled. So they fit into this conversation of how this study was looked at was, okay, is it truly a physiological issue? Like you have a lower, slower, you know, output in terms of how your body processes, you know, the energy of that's in the food, right? How it breaks it down, how it burns it off, et cetera. Or, you know, could it be the opposite where it's like you just have this disconnect between what expectation should be and then what your daily habits, rituals, and reality actually is? And I think that's the cool part where we look at it and we're like, well, the difference is when, and I want you to break it down in terms of, you know, looking at a 2000 calorie intake for a male and a 1600 calorie intake for a female, what that actually looks like using fasting, which we believe is the simplest way to get into that deficit, never mind, you know, build in some of that margin for error, which is why I think there's a really cool comparison here with what the results and the wins that we see early in the challenges, and then all of these other touch points and struggle points that people have had when it comes to weight loss resistance.
Yeah, and I think the simplification also comes down to the fact that number of eating opportunities is really that opportunity to underreport or to misunderstand how many calories you just took in.
Please,
right?
Please use a budget example, please.
So, you know, if we're talking about simplification and we think about one meal a day which is one eating opportunity within, you know, let's call it a 30, 45 minute window versus 2, 3, 4 or more eating opportunities. Every time you're intaking food, you have an opportunity. If you are tracking these calories, you have an opportunity to underreport, because what we saw in the study was that nobody ever overreported calories. Just like if we're doing a financial meeting, no one is ever overreporting the number of dollars they wasted, you know,
at Amazon or Starbucks, right? Or, you know, the beard salon or whatever, right? Like, yeah, we don't want to enjoy the overreporting.
No,
you know,
you don't want to admit to it. You don't, you know, you just don't, your brain wants to block it out and just forget it ever happened.
It was the elf,
right? Right. Elf on a shelf did it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
It was up to something.
No, it ate the calories. It spent the money. Don't worry about it. Didn't happen. Everyone underreported. So, you know, if you've ever underreported, you're not alone. Everyone who's reporting is underreporting. But if we understand that that's just the baseline default of what our brain's going to do, then we can start putting up the boundaries and protect ourselves from what we're doing subconsciously. So with fewer eating opportunities during the day, we have less opportunity to underreport. And I think that's big. And getting to the example, if we had, you know, let's say a 1600 calorie per day female, if you were doing one meal a day, OMAD, and you were eating roughly half of your calorie needs in that one meal, then you'd have roughly an 800 calorie deficit each day for 7 days, 5,600 calories. So that's 1.6 pounds of fat that you would be losing. And that's potential. With consistent,
that's yeah, potential throughout a week. Right.
And you know, that's with strict 800 calories. And that's also with, that's with consistent one meal a day. Okay.
Right.
And so 1.6 pounds, but you know, if, like you said, if you had a weekend, you had any sort of celebration or something like that, it would be easy to consume more than you thought. It would also be easy to weigh in after something like the weekend. Typically, the most common day that people weigh in is Monday, which tends
terrible
to be the
day.
Worst day
terrible.
Of the week, right?
Terrible, terrible, terrible.
So if you tend to, you know, have any social functions on the weekend, your best day would probably be Thursday or Friday to weigh in. So that you actually had your lowest point, so you could kind of see the movement. But either way, you know, removing some of that volatility across the weekend and other times that come up can be really helpful to not be discouraged by what you see on the scale. And you know, the example for 2,000 calories a day, or you know, for that you'd be at roughly 7,000 calories a week, and you'd still be at about 2 pounds of fat per week if you were looking at 2,000 calories a day. So it can go up from there. You know, a larger frame male might be looking at 3 pounds per week, but still looking within that range, it's not a huge margin of error, especially compared to, you know, what your first 10 days of fasting can do if you put those cycles together like we do in the challenge. So, you know, understanding how the scale might move after that, I think is a really important thing to know.
Hey, fasting fam, want to let you know about an incredible company that we've partnered with, AquaTrue.com. Promo code fasting for life to receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. These are not your old school pitcher filters or your refrigerator filters. We're talking about a proprietary 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process. Their countertop purifiers work with no installation or plumbing, which if you've priced those whole home water filtration systems, you know exactly what I'm talking about. These incredible countertop versions. They do have one under sink mounting model as well, but they remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, like I mentioned, and they're specifically designed to combat this new group of chemicals that the Environmental Working Group has done a deep dive on, these forever chemicals called PFAS or PFASs. These are in 45% of our U.S. tap water. 45%. These things can lead to endocrine system disruption, certain types of cancers, liver toxicity. And I'm so glad that there's now a countertop affordable version of this incredible technology. So as we fast, we know that water, outside of a little black coffee and tea, is the only thing that we drink. So if we're trying to get the biggest bang for our buck, we're trying to increase autophagy, allow our bodies to heal, shed the weight, get healthy, reverse disease, then why not give it the absolute best quality water that you can. So AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. It even makes a great gift, like I mentioned, my aunt and uncle. Today, as one of our loyal listeners, if you support them, you're supporting us. You're going to get 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com. That's AquaTru.com and enter code FASTING FOR LIFE. FASTINGFORLIFE. That's 20% off any of the AquaTrue water purifiers at AquaTrue.com.
And that was one of my favorite sentences in this study was, thus important basic psychological issues require elucidation before this form of diet resistance can be properly understood. And what I took away from that was the real life application of, you know, how our diet world works and the negative psychology that's built into it. And really, we want to focus on the habits that create consistency over time where, yes, you might lose 8 to 10 in the first, you know, week of a 10-day challenge. But, you know, we factor in the glycogen stores and, you know, the water loss, et cetera. And, you know, then we look at, okay, what can you expect to do over the next 3 to 6 months? Well, if you add up 2 pounds a week, right, times 4.3, you're looking at 8 to 10 pounds a month. Well, if you do that consistently over 6 months and you got 100 pounds to lose, well, you're well over halfway there.
Right.
So there's so much negative brought on with the scale, right? It automatically tells our brain a different story. Or then we have the other side of it with the underreporting. And never mind, we didn't even talk about the exercise portion of it, which I'll mention here in a second. But the underreporting is like, oh, you know, especially we hear a lot, especially now with the, you know, a lot of people working from home, being at home, school from home. You know, if you're making, you got multiple kids and you're making them food 3 to 4 times a day or getting them snacks if they're younger, there's a lot of opportunity for the slippage, Tommy, that we talk about, which is the, oh yeah, you know, I had my one meal, but oh yeah, I do eat a handful of cashews midday. Oh yeah, I did have that piece of sausage off of the thing. Oh, I had 2 cups of coffee with creamer today. So there's all these slippage points. And what we want is simplicity. Simplicity allows you to regain the control the fastest. And really, fasting for us was the missing piece. And never mind, you get all the other physiological benefits of fasting, right? But in terms of weight loss, it allowed us to build in some room for error. It allowed us to not have to be ridiculous with our tracking and our weighing and our, you know, counting our calories that we burn during exercise, which is the second piece of this, where those energy trackers and all those Fitbits and everything can overestimate up to 90%+ can be wrong in terms of what you're actually burning. And that's why I love this study, because they did such specific measurements on these people that there was no way that it was the actual physiological process of the individual, but it had to be the over reporting of their exercise, right? So these trackers and technology that we have today allows us to track more specifically, but then we have the other side where you're going to overestimate your actual expenditure. And that's why you don't ever add in, you know, calories burned in a workout into your daily allowance, because who knows, it could be 90% off, right? So really we want to look at the simplicity, and that's why we love the challenge so much. So expectations, poor psychology, bad habits, the failure over and over and over again, you start to believe the story that, yeah, I'm diet resistant. Well, no, there's a few things we can do in really honing in and teaching you and showing you exactly what we've learned, which is, you know, let's put together a plan, let's make it fit your life, and then just go do that for the next 4 to 6 weeks, and you're going to see an incredible transformation.
Yeah, consistency and simplicity are definitely the key. And one of the other things that I thought was so enlightening and empowering about this study was that they really did look at the potential that these subjects did actually have a slower metabolism. They measured for it.
Right.
And they found that even the ones who had everything that was self-reported of underworking metabolism and a slower metabolism and diet resistance, potential thyroid issues, family and genetic aspects, all of these things, none of this large group of obese subjects had anything wrong with their metabolism, despite some of them having 20 plus extreme or, you know, significant diet attempts in the past.
Right. And that was and not just this one study, but I think this one references six or eight other studies that show the underreporting issue. Right. And the reason I find this so powerful is one of the reasons is, you know, we have a, you know, 70% of the population is overweight. So BMI of over 25 or greater. And, you know, we're on pace for 50% population being obese, 30 or greater on the BMI scale, which again is not the most accurate way of health, but it is, there are correlations between being in those categories that result in poor health outcomes, shorter lifespan, more medications, more healthcare costs, more disease, et cetera. So, you know, if we can look at this from a different perspective where, okay, we know that, you know, you and I and other people are not some magical unicorn that's immune to the natural laws of thermodynamics and how our body burns off food, right. But that it could be us, it could be the way we're taught, could be our outside influences. It could be, you know, us bringing the dirty laundry with us into the new diet for the new year of 2021, right? We really want to set the stage. And that's why I'm super excited about the challenge, you know, at the end of this month. And actually in 10 days from now, because we're really honing in on these types of conversations and not just, oh, what should I eat? And should I use my Fitness Pal?
Right. And then going into the long-term habits and how to sustain it and how to keep the momentum going and how to keep seeing the wins on the scale, as well as what may be more important, even some of the non-scale victories that get reported within the challenge as well. And so, you know, just figuring out what your own individual struggle points are or what those things are that can derail you or that you need help with, you know, figuring out how to make small tweaks that lead to long-term habit changes. That's a big part of what we go into in the challenge as well. I love that part.
Yep. So a couple take-home things here. What can you do? Well, action step number one is sign up for the challenge. So I'm just going to drop that there. Share the podcast with a friend, give us a review, reach out to us if you have questions at info@thefastingforlife.com. The challenge is, Tommy, the website is thefastingforlife.com/live, correct?
Yeah, thefastingforlife.com/live.
Okay. So I'm sorry, www.thefastingforlife.com/live. You can find that on our website. You have questions, like I said, go ahead and reach out and to land the plane, as we like to say. Take away from this conversation is there's a lot of consistencies that we've seen with, you know, looking back at all of the conversations and questions and people that we've worked with over the last year. And, you know, underreporting or misreporting can be a big problem. But then there's also that life application where, you know, your life becomes the diet, your diet, you know, the plan should actually be, you know, centered around your life and allowing you to live and express and have fun and enjoy and not being so restrictive and omitting that you just give up and fall off the wagon. Like there's so many different layers here. So take home message, underreporting or misreporting is a real thing. It's been documented. If that's you, you know what to do. Hop on board. Let's get you into this challenge, Tommy. I'm super excited. Can't wait for the 28th. Let us know if you have questions. And we will talk soon.
Great. So you've heard today's episode and you may be wondering, where do I start? Head on over to thefastingforlife.com and sign up for our newsletter, where you'll receive fasting tips and strategies to maximize results and fit fasting into your day-to-day life.
While you're there, download your free fast start guide to get started today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Fasting for Life.